This meeting is now being recorded.
March 2017, 8:45 to 10:15, Board Governance and Fiduciary Responsibilities.
Thank you all for coming. I just want to make sure that everybody in the room is aware that this is one of our open sessions, and the open session is already live, and we'll be getting started in a few minutes, but we already have members of the community that have dialed into the Adobe room that is live for this open session. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Could you please take your seat? Thank you. So this morning, we begin with the review of the FY18 draft ICANN and IANA operating budget. And this session is going to be open and is going to be shepherded by Asha, our chair of our finance committee. So, Asha, I hand over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Shireen. Good morning. My name is Asha Hemrajani, and I'm the chair of the board finance committee. Today, we have a 90-minute open session on what essentially is a first look by the entire board of the draft FY18 budget covering the funding and expenses for the period from the 1st of July 2017 to the 30th of June 2018. The budget part covers overview of ICANN operations, new GTLD program, and the PTI budget. The operating plan includes activities needed to meet the goals in the ICANN strategic plan with updated KPIs for each goal. The five-year operating plan for the period fiscal year 16 to fiscal year 20 has been updated to reflect achievements projected by the end of fiscal year 17 and adjustments to subsequent years where applicable. We have also included in this budget highlights of the fiscal year 18 operating plan changes. Our CEO and CFO will be running through the material and highlighting the key points of the budget, but before I hand it over to them, I want to briefly cover two areas. First, what we have done to get to this stage, and secondly, what we want from the board for this session. We started engagement with the community on this fiscal year 18 budget back in September last year via webinar followed by a face-to-face session in Hyderabad, India. The Board Finance Committee reviewed the draft budget that staff prepared over two meetings. During these two meetings, the Board should know that the BFC, the Board Finance Committee, raised questions regarding the affordability of funding multi-year projects such as reviews mandated by the bylaws, as well as undertaking new projects such as the Information Transparency Initiative, which we as a Board discussed yesterday. The finance staff took the Board Finance Committee concerns into consideration and adjusted the budget accordingly, which we will see today. We now have a balanced budget, and the concept of a three-year planning cycle was discussed to give us better visibility. That discussion, I want to emphasize, will continue in Geneva. Based on these adjustments, the Board Finance Committee approved the posting of the draft budget for public comments on March 8th. You have all received the links to the publicly posted material. I also want to emphasize this is just the first step towards preparing the Board for a final review and approval in June in Johannesburg. The objective of this session today is to give the entire board an opportunity to review the budget to see if the board has any comments or inputs. I also want to note that there will be two sessions this week in Copenhagen to discuss the budget and financial accountability in general with the community. With that, I would like to hand it over to Joran, please.
Thank you, Ashan, and good morning. As a background this time, we're going to do something slightly different and slightly new, is that in the beginning of the budget presentation, we will walk through some of the highlights from each of the different functions within ICANN Org to give some sort of coating or coloring to what we're supposed to do later. And I will divorce myself that I will start the first part and then hand over to Xavier. I also asked my executive team to be here, so they can ask questions if you have any questions about what we are planning to do with it in the functions for next fiscal year. With that, can you change slide? You can also do the next slide now. Next. Maybe in the future it's easier if I can change. Technology. As a general introduction to the budget of FY18, these are the kind of internal words for what we're doing, and that is very much business as usual. There is no major programs, no big strategy changes, nothing that is opening new offices, that kind of ambitions that we've sometimes had over the last couple of years. So what you see during the activities for next fiscal year is that we continue to do what we're supposed to do, a little bit more, a little bit less, but it's always in the same trend. And also giving the opportunity for us to start planning for the future, which we need to do. And as we discussed earlier, we're going to talk about that already in the next board sessions in Geneva. So if you are looking for major initiatives, then you don't see them. It's very much just business as usual. Thank you. So, one of the major and most important functions we have is policy development or support for policy development. And I know that you looked into the operations plan, so this is just a highlight on some of those things. So the first thing is that what we do is we're assisting the 35 SMEs and secretariat services, which is a very, very important part of what we do. And this year is going to be, as you know, a fairly hectic year in many ways. Sorry, next year is going to be also a very hectic year for the community. As a more general remark, also we see that after the transition, the community now rightfully is coming back to what is the ICANN core, and that is working more with policies, but also with reviews. I will come back to that. And here you see some of those examples on the things we see for the next fiscal year. GNSO's new GLT subsequent procedures PDP working group, CCNSO retirement of CCTLDs, at last addressing the at last structures criteria and the review, the GAC issue regular communication, which we now have to handle in a new way, RSEC who provides advice on matters relating to the operation and so on, and ASSEC provides those advice as well. I think that one of the things that we've talked internally is also how we evolve and develop that things going forward. Next slide, please. Contractor compliance and consumer safeguard. As you know, Jamie Hedlund is now the new head of that, and he's already started looking into how to make it slightly more transparent, slightly more effective, but because it's a very important role. Also now, for next year, for the first time, we will see the long-awaited custom consumer safeguard role coming in, where we're in the last process of hiring a person coming into that. So a lot of the work with this department or function next year will be about making things a little bit better, but also much more transparent, adding on the new consumer safeguard person. Next slide, please. Office of the CTO. More and more, this is becoming an area which we utilize very much for us understanding how new technologies can happen. Of course, the KSK rollover is and will be a major thing for this function for now and the rest of this calendar year, but also actually happening during the next year. But more and more we see and we get a demand of working in a slightly different way. And one of those things is, for instance, the matrix that to track the health of the identifier systems, which is getting more and more attention also from the community. One of the things that we think is extremely important, and it is open up to the amount of information we have internally in our databases. As you know, there's a big demand from the community and from other stakeholders about what kind of data could they have, and not only in reports but also raw data. So the Open Data Initiative is and will be even more important for next year. Next one, please. I don't want to skip back from actually, so if you can go back. This year and next year is a little bit special also because we sort of starting to operationalize this what was called the new GLT program. So we're moving people internally from working with the new GLT program because of the amount of contracted parties, we are putting them into operation. That's a purely technical change, but you could see that in the budget when we actually move people between different envelopes. But I want to emphasize that not in this plan or in any other plan from any perspective we have any plans for any next round. So we have not built into the system that we anywhere have to do a new round somewhere to be able to do something sufficient. It is important to note that because sometimes there are people who think that we want to do that and build that into the system. Our role is here, and with the other ones, is to support the community and the board in those discussions, and that is not built into the system. Thank you. Next one, please. The GEC has a very important role when it comes to the outreach. Today, with 3.7 billion users all over the world, we also need to make sure that we have people coming into the system that can help us to develop the systems going forward. You heard me say many times that the Internet is both global and local. And one of those things we could see with the next billion users is that we need to understand the needs of people that maybe doesn't even have used the same kind of technologies we have. We're going to have more mobile users, and we're going to have much more IDNs. We're going to have much more local users of it. So we need to continue to support locally. We need to be able to support better to have new people coming into the ICANN system but also staying there. And therefore, the global stakeholder engagement is important. After the transition, and before the transition, we did a lot of working explicitly with the governments. Now we have a lot of engagement within the GAC, but there is an important need for ICANN to participate and be there to explain also going forward what ICANN actually does. Sometimes in governments there is a misunderstanding about our role, about our mission and what we do. And one part of this that we do more and more in government engagement is actually just to be in the room to try to explain what are we doing, how does ICANN work, and sometimes even how does Internet work. So we're not doing explicit to have much more engagement within GAC. We are very much adopting more and more role to explain what ICANN is doing to be able to defend actually the way we do things. Thank you. Over the last couple of years and going forward, we have developed and are continuing to develop IT system that supports us but also the community in a better way. You've seen that last year, when we finished out the rollout of the new ERP system, for instance. But you can also see that we have a great attention to things like cybersecurity that we have to invest in because ICANN is what it is. In the budget right now, there's no major initiatives going forward. If there is major initiatives, as you know, we discuss them separately, where we have to finance them separately. So it's still very much business as usual. But in IT, business as usual is a lot of work. Thank you. Next slide. If you summarize also that you see that we're kind of dividing the different parts of ICANN or the functions a little bit differently now, and we call operations or support, which is HR, finance, procurement, ERM, legal security operations, board operations, and administration. The reason for that is also to point out that these are support for internal services, and that's how we work. The year that we're doing right now and the year we're going forward is very much operational quality or connecting the dots. And over the last couple of days, we've gone through many of those projects that we are doing just to become more efficient and understand and manage the operations. Thank you. I now, after this very summary, open this part if there's any questions about the operations. And good morning, by the way.
Xavier?
Thank you, Asha. So we will now go through the rest of the presentation. Next, thank you. Very simple information here to anchor your mind around the main numbers of the budget. So we have here the draft FY18 budget compared to the FY17 forecast as a reference for comparison purposes. So first, funding and expenses are equal. This is a balanced budget that is offered to the community for consultation at $143 million of funding and of expenses. As you can see, in FY17, we are expecting a small excess on the basis of a slightly higher funding than originally budgeted for and a slightly lower amount of expenses than budgeted for. For as a reminder, our budget for FY17 planned for a balanced budget as well of 132.4 million of expenses and of funding. So from a budget of 132 to a budget of 142 for FY18. Next slide, please. So at the highlights of this budget, and then we will go further to provide you more insights on it. As a reminder, every year now, we do two things. We first look at our five-year operating plan and update it to reflect the accomplishments of the past year, adjust the current and subsequent years within that plan in order to reflect the progress made over the past year or so. As a reminder, we are now planning for the year three of our five-year operating plan. FY18 is year three, and FY17 that we are currently in is year two. And this is the second update of this five-year operating plan. It was produced and approved by the board in during FY15. We updated it last year for the first time. And we will go over highlights of the changes that have happened on this five-year operating plan as well. Next, as I said, we are, as usual, planning for a balanced budget, and the expenses and the funding are equal, of course. Just to highlight, we are not planning this year to fund any activities from the reserve fund, as opposed to what we have been doing in FY15, 16, and 17, primarily for the INS stewardship transition project. The funding is increasing as per our projections at a slower rate than it has in the past. The funding, as you've seen in the earlier slide, is about 5% above our expectation for FY17. And we will see that there are some assumptions in this projection, Ram Mohan will help us go through these, an assessment of these assumptions in the next slides. And the slowdown of the growth of the funding is fairly consistent and expected. It's fairly consistent with the simple fact that we have now reached close to the peak of the number of top-level domains in operations, and that number of top-level domain in operations is one of our drivers to the funding of ICANN. The expenses of ICANN, they increase organically of about 5% as well, even though we build in the budget a contingency for possible unexpected expenses or expenses that come at a different cost than we were originally planning. And in the 143 million of expenses that we are mentioning here, we will see that there's approximately 6 million of expenses in the contingency. Next slide, please. Sorry. Yes, Shireen.
This is Shireen Chalvi for the record. Can you go back one slide, please? So I'm looking at the second bullet point, FY18 budget balance, no initiative funded from the reserve fund. And this is also a balanced budget. So how do you intend, or what do you think? I don't think you have an answer now, but if there are any initiatives between now and when the budget is approved in June that come up and needs funding, what is the process for updating the draft budget to reflect that.
Thank you, Shireen. So if there would be significant assumptions that suggest a change versus the draft, we would need to rework a tentative budget that would be different than what has been presented here and is currently under public comment. And we would need also to determine how we provide transparency and engage with the community on those changes prior to then offering to the board this revised budget, inclusive of community input. It could lead to a different timing of approval of the budget if these changes would be sufficiently substantial that the process would be delayed as a result.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next slide, please. So, a quick overview of the planning process. Asha reminded you of what happened over the past few months in terms of engagement with the community. Quick reminder, where we are now and what we do from a planning standpoint. You remember we have a strategic plan for the years FY16 to FY20. It is complemented by the five-year operating plan that I referred to earlier, and we use that five-year operating plan as a basis every year to produce the annual operating plan and the corresponding budget, which is simply the quantification of the resources required to deliver on that operating plan. And we are now at the phase of looking at this annual operating plan and budget, as well as an overview of the update of the five-year operating plan. Next slide, please. Quick overview of the timeline. We're here close to the middle of this timeline. We published this draft operating plan and budget on the 8th of March, a few days ago. The duration of the public comment period exceeds the minimum required, and it's at 55 days. We were at 56 days last year. As you recognize here, we mirror very closely the timing of the process from last year. Between the end of the public comment period at the end of April and the end of May, we will have intense activity to respond to the public comments, inclusive of interaction with the communities and the individuals who will have provided public comment. We will see that in the next steps. Is there any question on the process overall? Yes, Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Xavier. Interaction with the community between now and the end of May, when we're collecting these comments, what engagement opportunities do you have, and what do those look like?
Thank you. Asha was referring to earlier a few sessions that will happen during ICANN 58. There's a number of sessions, the budget ad hoc working group, as well as presentations across a number of SOs and ACs. We have, I believe, five presentations to various groups on the budget, varying from a 15-minute update to an hour or an hour and a half presentation. So a lot of interaction with the community during ICANN 58, which is why we try to publish the draft before the meeting, so that we benefit from the face-to-face interaction with the community. There will be an opportunity, and we are reminding the community that we welcome clarifying questions by the end of March on the draft budget, so that we can then help the understanding of the community on this budget by responding to those clarifying questions during the public comment period. And those are clarifying questions only. And as I indicated, immediately after the end of the public comment period, we will have calls, and the BFC members will participate to these calls to listen in to the organizations or individuals who have provided comment to ensure we adequately understand those comments and that we can explain how we will respond to those comments. And this step has proven very useful in the past to ensure that we have a good approach to responding to comments and effectively addressing the comments, which is always a challenge. Thank you. Next slide, please. Oops, sorry. Sherry.
Another process parallel to this is the SOs and ACs additional budget request. Could you highlight to us the timing of that and how it's included in the draft budget?
Sure, thank you. And I'll skip the slide on which we speak about that later on. As Shireen reminded you, we have a separate parallel small process that allows the SOs and ECs to submit a request for funding of specific activities that are particularly of interest to them and focused on what they would like to achieve. This process has been created about 5-6 years ago. It's parallel simply because we, as the result of community input, we have advanced the process of developing and approving the funding of those requests so that those requests that pertain to activities that happen early in the fiscal year, in the next few months, immediately after July 1st, 2017, can be funded and can be planned for if they have been approved and funded. So you will be submitted for approval early April, a set of actions that trigger expenses, and therefore you will be asked to approve these expenses for those SO and EC requests. The deadline for submission was early February, and we are now in the process of reviewing the requests submitted, and at the end of this evaluation, we will review those requests for reasonableness with the BFC. And on the basis of BFC's recommendation and of the staff's recommendation, the entire board will be offered to approve the funding of those requests.
Yeah, but there is an envelope inside this budget for that request.
Correct. So not yet knowing what the final amount of the requests that will be approved will be, we always include in the draft an envelope. This year and the past year, it was $600,000, increased from $500,000 in the past, an envelope of $600K to ensure that we have funding for those requests. Thank you. Next slide. We will review in the next few slides information that you will understand better with the overview of the structure of the financial reporting that we have at ICANN. On the left, the ICANN operations, we will look at funding, which is the first box from the top. We will look at the baseline expenses, and then we have some initiatives still in FY17, but we don't have initiatives funding in FY18. And at the bottom, you have the funds that support each of the operations. On the right in orange, you have the new GTLD program. As you remember, we continue segregating entirely the new GTLD program from a funding perspective through the application fees. The expenses of the program are segregated, and the funds that support the program from the application fees are also segregated, as well as are the auction proceeds generated through the auctions of last resort that have occurred. The total of those two main blocks, ICANN operations and UGTLD program, represents ICANN in total. You have noticed, of course, that within the ICANN operation, there is the INF functions being carved out from an operational standpoint within the PTI legal entity, both from a funding and an expense perspective. And that's the red boxes that you can see on the left of the slide. As a just quick note, this structure is consistently disclosed in our quarterly stakeholder calls so that the public can understand how we report the information. Next. So let's go a little bit more in depth on a number of aspects of our planning and FY18 annual operating plan. So every year we review the content of our planning both from a strategic and operating plan perspective. The strategic plan was reviewed again this year to identify if any substantive changes in our strategic plan should be considered, and we haven't considered that there was any changes required. The INS stewardship transition nor the creation of PTI changed the objectives that are disclosed in the strategic plan from our perspective, and we will seek input on that from the community. Then the operating plan has been updated throughout its entire structure. The portfolios that support the strategic and objectives have been reviewed and updated. We also update the KPIs that measure the delivery and the performance of the organization in delivering the activities of the plan. Dependencies between various activities have been reviewed, and as I indicated earlier, the phasing of the activities has been also adjusted to reflect the progress anticipated by the end of FY17. So it's a fairly large and in-depth and detailed process, since we have approximately 340 projects that we are updating, and they are grouped under about 50-55 portfolios under the strategic operating plan. Next. Three quick highlights of those updates. Just to give you a sense of what are the largest ones. The PTI budget is, of course, a significant adjustment to how the operating plan is structured, because we've regrouped all the activities supporting the INF functions under the PTI structure. We have, of course, the update of the INF stewardship transition activities that has also been reflected in the operating plan of FY18, because it's a change from FY17. And we're also highlighting that we have a significant review activity planned for in FY18 on the basis of the schedule of reviews embedded in our bylaws. Any questions on this? Seeing none, next. Next. Quick highlight, therefore, on PTI and the INA budget. Just a quick but important note here is that the PTI operations budget was reviewed and submitted to public comment between the early part of November and the end of December. It was reviewed by the PTI board and adopted by the board for submission to ICANN as input into this budget. So this budget of $143 million that we've looked at includes all of the expenses for the INF functions that have been submitted for adoption by the PTI board. In addition to the PTI direct operations, there is a limited amount of costs that are supporting the INF functions and located in ICANN but not in the PTI operations, and this is mainly the RZMA, and the Root Zone Management Agreement with VeriSign. Next. An innovation this year. In the draft public document, we have inserted for transparency a section that describes what would be the caretaker budget, which, as a reminder, is the budget that would be put into effect should the rejection power of the empowered community be triggered and approved by the empowered community. And that caretaker budget would be in effect between the time the veto is the budget veto is approved by the empowered community and the time it would be resolved with a new updated budget approved by the board. Could be a few weeks, could be a few months, and this caretaker budget would be in effect. There's a section in the draft document that suggests how to determine this caretaker budget, and we will have a lot of discussions with the community on that approach. Next slide. Quick overview of the decisions that the board has specifically made in the past on the basis of the standard delegation of authority. That actually pertain, in this case, to the approval of the delegating to the CAO the authority to contract for two meetings, the Puerto Rico meetings and the Barcelona meetings. We include here only the decisions that the board has made since the beginning of the fiscal year 2017 that we are in now. Next slide, please. So an overview of more detailed overview of our budget. In the blue section on the left, the draft numbers of our FY18 budget. Again, compared to FY17, you recognize here the same numbers of $143 million of funding and expenses for FY18 compared to the $136 million or so of funding for FY17 and $130 million of expenses. You have the breakdown here by personnel, travel and meetings, professional services. We'll go over the changes between 17 and 18 over the next few slides. You have also at the bottom of the schedule the headcount average, the average headcount year on year that corresponds to the level of personnel costs that you see here. Next slide, please. An overview of our funding. Our funding, as you know, comes from or is driven by the number of domain registrations to an effect of approximately 66% of our funding. And it is also driven by the number of contracted parties under contract with ICANN for about 32% of our revenue. So about two-thirds driven by registration and transactions, about one-third driven by fixed fees. And those are collected from the registries on one hand and the registrars on the other hand. I want to point out to the top right corner of this graph, because we will speak a little bit later about the fixed fees from the registries. You see here $30 million or so of that fixed fee. This is very simply about 1,200 registries delegated in the route, which we're very close to be achieving, times the $25,000 that each registry pays to ICANN as a fixed fee. That's $30 million. This number, which has been growing from zero 3 years ago to $30 million in FY18, will not grow further unless there's new registries in the route in the future. But we have now nearly reached the end of the new GTLD being delegated in operations. So I want to emphasize that about a quarter of our funding is now at a fixed amount that will not continue to grow unless there would be new TLDs delegated in the routes in the future. Next slide, please. This is the underlying volumes of transactions or numbers of contracted parties that are assumed in this budget. I will highlight one assumption of significance that we are making here in this budget, which is a fairly conservative one. We are assuming that there could be a reduction of the number of registrars that are accredited with ICANN in the future on the basis of the fact that we have grown the number of registrars in the past few months. with many registrations for many accreditations, resulting from a small number of registrar families that have registered a lot of new registrars for mainly for drop catching opportunities. And we think that it is possible in the future that by lack of economic benefit, if that would be the case, then some of the registrars could be deaccredited by those families because they don't see necessarily anymore the benefit of having those registrars. And each individual registrar triggers a fee of $4,000 to ICANN by its simple existence. So we are assuming a reduction by 25% of the number of registrars during FY18, starting at the end of the first quarter. With that, I would like to ask Ram Mohan to provide some insights to the budget assumptions that we have produced. Ram has been kind enough to spend some time looking at the detailed assumptions on the budget, which are in the public document, and looking at them from a DNS marketplace standpoint and providing some insight to the BFC, to a number of the BFC members, and during a call that we had with Ram prior to the publication of this budget. Ram?
Xavier, would it be more appropriate for Ram to step in when we talk about the upsides and the downsides for this?
Can we go back one slide, please? So on the right of this graph, you can see that we're mentioning here a low and a high scenario, around a best scenario of funding. We, as we have done in the past, we have tried to establish a bit of a sensitivity of our funding assumptions and test a bit what would our funding look like with different assumptions of growth of both registrations and number of contracted parties. And you can see here the low scenario is quite close to the assumptions that we've retained. The high scenario shows about $4 million additional revenues based on higher growth of both legacy TLD registrations as well as new GTLD registrations. The number of contracted parties is not a parameter that we have flexed in these sensitivity analyses. Thank you. With that, Ram, if you want to move.
Thank you, Xavier. This is Ram Mohan. As they've done in years past, and the BFC, as you said, Xavier, BFC asked me for my input and perspective on the funding aspect of the budget based on my knowledge and experience in the domain name industry. And based on my feedback to date, I see several small changes in the sensitivity analysis of the funding assumptions, and I broadly agree with the output that you have here in terms of the sensitivity analysis. But for the board, let me share a little bit of a perspective of how I got there, how I got to that level of comfort. And I'll give you a little bit of the perspective of the marketplace as I see it, so that we can then reconcile that with the assumptions that are being made. Now, all of my analysis goes up to the time period through the end of December 2016. So that's kind of the time period I'm using, which is a little bit displaced from what the ICANN budgeting assumptions are, which starts mid-calendar year. Okay? From what I look at, overall, it appears that the GTLD marketplace has grown about 15% year over year as measured by domains under management. And I attribute that gain largely due to significant growth in the Chinese marketplace or registrations that arrive out of China, so to speak. The Chinese marketplace has become a major engine of growth for many GTLDs. And I'll touch on that towards the end of my comments. New GTLDs account for approximately 14% of the total number of GTLDs, again, as of December 2016. But my observation is that the growth rate for new GTLD, domains under management, that growth rate seems to be leveling off. And it may be correlated to the fact that most new GTLDs have already been delegated. They've gone through, you know, the sunrise and the land rush and the open periods, the general availability periods, right? So that opportunity for growth spikes, you know, most of the TLDs are done. There are a few TLDs still left. Some of them are large, potentially large GTLD opportunities, but it's hard to say what that's going to be. We shouldn't be looking at that in any of our projections here. Now, if you look at the new GTLD growth rate, and the way I measure that is measured monthly versus a year ago. That's the way I look at it. And the advantage of using that method, you know, monthly versus year ago, is that it removes the effect of seasonality on the overall analysis. So if you look at that, in 2014, early 2015, new GTLD growth rate was about 500%, which was, of course, a significant number of new TLDs being introduced. But that's now kind of leveling off, and as of 2016, December, that rate seems to be about 100%, but it's still on a downward trend overall. And the legacy TLD growth rate measured the same way, monthly versus a year ago, there was a dramatic spike in late 2015 and early 2016. And I attribute that spike primarily to the registrations that came out of China. And in fact, it went from about 1.something% in the second quarter of 2015, it jumped all the way to almost 8% in late 2015, early 2016. But that spike seems to be done, and we're on the legacy TLDs, it seems to be somewhere around just a little bit above 2%, again, measured monthly versus year ago, right? So if you look at all of that, in the assumptions that ICANN has made, that Xavier, you have put in there, I'm going to go into details that are in the appendix, but the best estimate on legacy TLDs, your assumptions seem to be in line with what I'm seeing in the marketplace. The high estimate, I think, is reasonable, and the low estimate, which is about 1.5%, also seems to be reasonable. Historically, we've really rarely, I don't think, at least in my experience, I have not seen legacy TLD growth rate as measured, you know, monthly versus year ago. I've really never seen it drop below 1.5%. So that's a pretty good low estimate. On new TLDs, what you have is, as your current best estimate, close to a 30% year-over-year growth rate. That seems conservative and reasonable. And if you look at what I had said earlier, that on new TLDs, we're looking at last year about 100% growth rate, but it's coming down. I was estimating that the high estimate that we should be looking at should not be more than 65%, and you've actually got 60% as your assumption. And again, to me, that's appropriately conservative in what you're doing. The last comment that I want to make here is the importance of the China marketplace in our funding assumptions. To give you a sense of perspective, at least in my analysis, there were about 30 million domain names, 30 million domain names originating out of China as of year-end 2015. And that represented about a 51% increase over 2014. And 2016 was also a banner year for many TLDs, especially new GTLDs and some of the legacy GTLDs as well in China. So I think that from our funding assumptions, we have quite a significant and growing exposure to the China marketplace, and I think we ought to understand what the impact of the China marketplace is going to be. It is unclear whether there is whether the growth in the domain name registrations and volume that comes out of China is either sustainable or that it is that there is underlying base of usage of the domain names being registered. I think that is important for ICANN to understand and to find out what the marketplace dynamics are. And we could just talk to registries and registrars who are there. We may not need to do primary analysis. We could, you know, go talk to the community folks on that. But I would recommend that we do that. But I think we have some exposure, especially in the year that we're looking at on renewal rates that come out of China. I know, Xavier, that I think we don't do renewal rate analysis at this point, but again, for future years, I think that's useful to start to think about what the renewal rate rates might be and the analysis of the cohorts of new create registrations, new registrations that are coming in. Because at the end of the day, the quality of the revenue assumptions is going to be dependent upon whether that revenue stream is dependable. And my sense, and I don't have hard data to back it up, but my sense is that quite a lot of the growth in China has been promoted by significant promotional campaigns that are being run in country. And I think maybe not for this FY18, but I think for FY19, we ought to consider what the impact is, you know, from the China marketplace. So with that, overall, I think, you know, there is a slowing transaction volume trend in new GTLDs. It's kind of a steady rate in legacy TLDs, GTLDs. I feel pretty comfortable with the estimate scenarios that you have here in terms of funding.
Thank you very much for that, Ram. I have three people in the queue, but before I turn to them, Xavier, would you like to respond to Ram, please?
Yes, quick comment. I just want to remind everyone that the funding assumptions relative to registrations, we look at the worldwide registrations, and these are the numbers that get into the funding calculations, which, of course, includes any registrations from any countries specifically. In the past, we have tried to isolate erratic growth or changes in the volume of registrations from any types of activity when we thought that this would not be a good basis to develop our future assumptions. So when we were seeing erratic changes that were affecting our historical data, we removed the effect of those erratic changes in order to not be counting on or develop future assumptions on the basis of aggressive potentially assumptions. The reason I'm mentioning that is because last year we have eliminated the very strong and short-term growth that occurred from a number of Chinese registrations in order to not integrate in our assumptions that growth so that we don't bias our funding assumptions on that basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Xavier. And Ram, again, once again, thank you for your help to the Board Finance Committee in this work. I have Martin, Chris, and George in the queue.
Me as well.
Oh, I didn't see you. Yone, after that. So first, Martin.
Thank you, Asha. Thanks, Ram, for the excellent analysis. Very much appreciated. And I very much also agree that we don't only need to look for the coming year, but we can look a couple of years ahead because some of these developments can be predicted. As you said, emphasis on renewable rates is excellent in that because it's much more stable normally over time than the new uptake, which is less predictable. And also thank you for recognizing, obviously, China. I mean, it's clear that there was a spike, and it's unclear what's going to happen with that. The only thing I missed in your analysis is that, obviously, some of the best TLDs, and like .web, where there's clearly a lot of high expectations from the market that it will deliver a lot of new domains. Otherwise, parties wouldn't have bid so much for that. That is not reflected in these numbers, right?
Yeah, that's correct. This is all of my analysis is done on the basis of actual registrations, actual volume. There are no projections based on hypothetical, TLD delegations that have hypothetical volume. So, in many ways, the analysis is really what is the history and what can we derive looking at the trends that are happening in the marketplace. And that's why I think it's actually quite useful to look at the monthly versus year ago, because that gives you a pretty good macro view of what the overall trends look like.
Yes, thanks. And well, recognizing that .web is now expected at zero, basically, we can have an upside there. It is not as bad as a potential downside, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Martin. Chris?
Thank you. I've got a couple of things I want to say to Ram, but I just want to pick up on what Martin's just said. Actually, we need to be extremely careful about factoring in anything to do with any domains that don't currently exist. We have no clue on the timing of their existence, if they ever will, etc. So we need to be really careful. Ram, thank you. Just a couple of things. On the renewal side, the renewals are obviously very important, and it's relevant, of course, how long the name registered for. Because in some markets, you can register for like 1 year to 10 years, and if you see your spike and your spike is all 1 year registrations, you can have a different set of assumptions than if you see the spike and the spike is all 10 year registrations. In respect to spikes, I can tell you that whilst Martin's right and when he says that we can't say what's going to happen, there are some examples in the CCTLD world of spikes from the same market at the same time, and they have fixed registration periods, and a significant percentage of those names have not been renewed. So we can, if we choose to, do a little bit of research into some CCTLD markets and see whether or not there's a trend that we can at least try and apply to the GTLD market based on the similarities between the spikes.
Thank you, Chris. Quickly in response, I agree with you. And in fact, one of the things that I like about the ICANN budgeting process, it's similar to what I do at my company as well, is you don't make future budget assumptions based on hockey stick assumptions of revenue. You know, that's kind of a good spreadsheet jockeying exercise, but it's not good for reality. To your question about the term of a name, if you analyze over a long period of time, the average term in the GTLD market, it tends to be just a little tiny bit over 1 year. And that trend has stayed the same even in the China spike. So for all extents and purposes, all our modeling should be based on a one-year term rather than a multi-year term.
With factored in renewal rates based on that 1 year. I mean, you're not saying that at the end of that 1 year and a bit, the names drop. You're just saying that the average period of time that the domain is registered before renewing is a year and a half, a bit. Or are you saying they drop?
So I'm actually saying two things. One is that if you look at overall trends of when a new domain name gets registered, what is the average, and in fact what is the median, you'll find that that's about 1 year, just a little over 1 year. What I'm also saying is that I think at this point in time, the ICANN budgeting process does not yet take into account sensitivity analysis that is relevant to renewals. And one of the recommendations I was making was that we ought to look at that as a determinant of the potential accuracy of future budgets. Because the funding assumptions are based on historical averages and historical rates. But the reality is that most of this is annuity income and you can trend annuity income based on renewal rates.
Thanks, Ram. Understood.
Thank you, Chris and Ram. George, you're next.
Thanks. Ram, I take your point that the China market is becoming increasingly important. Given the spike in registrations, do we have any solid information on how much of this is speculative, how much is parked, and how much is actually being put into use? My guess is that it was almost totally speculative, and that means that if the renewal rate is about 1 year, we have an income source which is not reliable.
I think that's exactly what we ought to go and talk to our friends in the industry and ask them what they're seeing, because there is data available, and we ought to collect that data and use that as input into FY19 planning assumptions. It's a little bit opaque right now. It's a little bit hard to say precisely where it's coming from, but I don't know if Xavier or Akram, if you have some relevant input in this area.
Sure. Thank you, Ram. We, in all of our assumptions, we are very conservative. It's important to understand that we do take into account the renewal rates in every GTLD, and in these assumptions, we are very conservative. So we take into account the risk that there could be a lower renewal rate than in traditional TLDs. Given the age of the TLD, and we don't have that much history, then we always err on the conservative side. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Just one quick comment. This is anecdotal, but I know of some TLDs that have a 9% renewal rate, but I also know of other TLDs that have a 60-something percent renewal rate with a book that is derived, quite a bit of the book of their business derived from China. So that's why I'm saying it's a little hard to make definitive statements right now, and I think the task in front of us is to go poll the marketplace and ask people who are actually engaged in this every day.
Thank you. Xavier, did you have something to add to Akram's comments?
Just very quickly, as Akram said, we do take into account renewal rates on a TLD-by-TLD basis as an illustration of the conservatism and on the basis of advice in the past of both community members and of board members who have knowledge on the market. We have, for example, assumed a 10% renewal rate on the TLDs that had provided free registrations. We've actually been proven wrong most of the times because those registrations renewed actually at a much higher rate than 10%. But we've been conservative in assuming 10% rate. So just 1 out of 10 registrations would actually carry over another year. So that's the type of things that we do for the assumptions.
Okay, thank you, Xavier. Now we have Yone.
Yes, thank you. So Jonas Wanen for the record. So what I'm reading from this or getting from this presentation is basically that, and thank you very much, Ram, for the kind of outlook on what is the situation today in the marketplace. But it seems that our kind of like assumptions are sound, and we can more or less trust in the current market this. But the kind of like main point that I get from Xavier is basically that our revenue assumptions from the past has now changed quite significantly. We're not seeing growth anymore. We're seeing stabilization with some increased risk, which we have to factor in and which we have to understand into the future budgets. So I think this is kind of like the most, one of the important things, takeaways from this is really that we have to look at also how we look at the budgets in the future based on this, that our assumptions on the kind of our revenue growth have changed quite a bit since the beginning of the new GTLD process.
And this is Yara Morby for Reckitt. You're drawing the right conclusion is that we see a decline in the increase of funding going forward. And I think it's important that we also recognize that we don't make any assumptions about any
new revenue streams going forward, we have to handle what we have. Because we don't ever get forced in to be able to do some, have to do something because we don't plan. And that's why one of the underlying themes of this budget is business as usual. That means that we don't add a lot of new costs or obligation going forward. Create the time for us to go planning. And when we talk about planning, it's not about new revenue streams. We're actually talking about how we should manage the things that we're supposed to do now with the current budget and operations. Your assumption is right, Sonia.
Thank you for that, Joran. Now we have Ron.
Thank you, Asha. If we can jump back to slide 30 for a moment, please. Thanks. The feedback from the community, specifically around the IANA function, tends to be kind of pointed. And if I look at just the IANA cost in the 18 budget versus the 17 forecast, there's a 15% increase overall. But I want to focus at the headcount component. There's an average headcount going from 21.3 in 17 forecast to 22.6 in the 18 proposed budget. So maybe, Akram, this is a question for you. Elise is here as well. Either one of you. Can you talk about the staff plans for the IANA function, and I'm assuming some part of this is cost allocation as well, and what that balance is to get to the budget proposed for 18.
So the staffing plan for FY18 for the IANA functions is to add additional headcount in the security area, the DNSSEC cryptographic manager area, as well as to add a project manager for some of the development projects that we have coming down the pike.
Is this then the size of the IANA team, the proposed size of the IANA team in 18, or is there some amount of this that is cost allocation for overhead and administration?
Some of this is cost allocation also.
Clarify a little bit about.
Yes, because right now we're at a headcount of 13, and by that's what we've filled our positions. We have three unfilled positions for FY17. So by the end of FY17, we should have 17, and then we'll have 19 in FY18. Excuse me.
We've actually accommodated all the requests of the IANA needs, both in FY17 and also in FY18, and we continue to actually provide the team with the resources they need to not only continue to perform their task, but also to improve their systems and keep improving their delivery to their customers. So I think that we have a much better budget now than we actually did a few years back for the IANA team.
Just to clarify something that Elise was saying earlier, she was commenting on the number of people in the department that is directly and exclusively dedicated to the IANA functions. The number of average headcount that appears here also includes the fraction of resources that are shared across other functions, but who do spend a portion of their time on supporting the IANA functions, like IT, for example, or legal. So to your point, there's allocation of resources that support the IANA function in addition to the dedicated team that Elise supervises. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Notwithstanding Ron's question, I think we had an excellent discussion on the funding.
Rinalia?
Yes, Rinalia. Sorry, I didn't see your, and you didn't put it in the chat, but go ahead.
Thank you, Asha. Rinalia speaking. I have questions about slide 30, and I was wondering if Xavier could elaborate a little more in terms of the increase in funding for personnel of 15%. Is the increase in the number of people fairly well distributed across the organization, or is it mainly concentrated somewhere, and where is that concentrated? And is that associated with the increase in administration cost of 10%? Also, in terms of the decrease of capital funding of 53%, if you could elaborate on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rinalia. Next slide, please, because we have some explanation of that in the next two slides. Next. Further. Thank you. So the increase in the personnel cost is the result of two effects. There's the effect of natural, in quotes, inflation relative to salary increases when there's any, and the increase of headcount as well. And you see here in the number three on this slide, the numbers of headcount. This is both average and end of period headcount. So there's a growth of headcount of approximately 6% between the end of FY17 and the end of FY18. So during FY18, this is a projected growth of headcount. There is also in the personnel cost the impact of an assumption of inflation level of salary increase for the existing team members. Relative to the distribution of headcount growth, it is distributed across most functions. There's some concentration sometimes and we have information on the in the appendix on the headcount by function, so we can go over that a bit more in detail, but there is growth in the GDD area, for example, because we have, as you know, much more much more contracted parties to support, so that's a fairly direct impact. There's also more resources that support the reviews. We're going to have more reviews in FY18 than we were planning over the past couple of years, and as you know very well. So that's where we have some increases, but it's not concentrated on one or two functions. It's distributed across the various functions, and we have more detail of that both in this presentation and in the public document. I missed one of your questions.
With the administration increases associated
and capital.
Yes.
So the administration costs include largely all the real estate costs, so the rent costs, as well as the telecommunication costs. Both telecommunication costs supporting the ICANN organization personnel, but also the community. So all the conference calls, the interpretation services and so on that support all the calls that ICANN operates for the community organizations are also in the administration cost. So both of those components, rent and telecommunication costs, have increased in this budget on the basis of more reviews, more PDP processes expected. So a general increase, if you wish, in the volume of calls happening in the community. That's our expectations. Capital. We have a more limited number of significant projects in the IT area, the IT infrastructure. As you remember, we have now nearly completed the ERP implementation. We have also the Salesforce.com implementation in the registries area that has been two large projects in FY17, and we don't have as many large projects in FY18, and therefore you see a decrease in the capital spend from that perspective. Just also one technical aspect is that when we implement systems that are SaaS-based, so software as a service, the costs come through in operating expenses versus capital expenses when we buy and install your own system that you keep for yourself. When you use a software as a service, you pay ongoing operational costs. You don't buy and implement the system. So that's a different cost structure. Someone agrees with me here.
Strictly yourself.
Oh, thank you. Does that help you? Thank you.
Thank you, Xavier. So just a time check. We have 13 minutes left. I just want to quickly summarize our discussion on the funding because I thought that was an excellent discussion. I'm very glad that we had it. This is the one area we really don't have too much control over. We have some control over costs. We had this discussion, brief discussion just now about the administration and about the personnel. On the revenue side, that's very much dependent on market conditions. I got two interesting suggestions from today's discussion. One is asking the CCTLD folks for their inputs, and the second one is a sensitivity analysis for the renewals. So we'll put that as some things we can consider for the next round. So given that we have 13 minutes left, let's move on, unless any more questions on these two slides. Yes, Lucevis.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question on the fourth assumption here, which is that Workstream 2 is going to be concluded by the end of this year. I just want to understand correctly. If I think there's still a risk that there could still be a decision that there could be an extension. If that is the case and the money that hasn't been used can be carried over to fiscal year 18, if I understand correctly, that money does not actually cover staff costs. So would that mean we would need additional funding for staff, or does that include the support that our staff gives the various working groups in Workstream 2 as well? Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. That was going to be my next comment, is to highlight for you the assumption that's at the bottom of the slide here. And before I answer your question, I just want to explain that even though there was significant visibility over the risk that WS2 extends beyond the end of FY17, at the time we published the official position approved by the board and the chartering organization for WS2 was that it was going to be finishing at the end of FY17. Of course, in this draft budget for public comment, we have not wanted to challenge that assumptions and take a different assumptions. You will see in the risk slides that we have the risk and opportunities. We have listed, of course, WS2 as being a risk of being extended into FY18. So to your point, if you remember, the board approved the FY17 budget last year under an assumption that there would be funds supporting the INS stewardship transition project, of which WS2 is a large component. That budget assumption that was approved last year was on the basis that the envelope allocated for WS2 would be the envelope allocated for WS2 irrespective of the duration of the work. So to your point, if there is an extension of WS2 into FY18, which is likely, the presumption is that it would be on the basis of not spending more money than what was assumed to be in the FY17 budget, which is the 8.8 million total. The 8.8 million is not just for WS2, but it was the total envelope for the project. And currently, WS2 has spent a significantly lower amount of money than what was budgeted for. So there is possibility for an extension that would not necessarily cost more money, and that would be certainly the assumption under which the extension would be considered from the chartering organizations and from this board as well. The staff costs, if we extend, the staff costs, of course, are occurred on the basis of time. So we assume the end of FY17 for the staff cost. If we extend, there would be incremental cost. So we would need to see how we fund those incremental costs. Options are, as an example, that some of the money that was allocated for maybe legal advice in FY17 that has not been used may be redirected to cover for staff costs, for example. That's an option. Other options would be to consider supporting the staff costs of the support of WS2 in a different fashion.
Just a time check. We have 9 minutes left and 10 slides more to cover. So, Shireen, do you want to? Okay. Go ahead, Xavier, please.
Thank you. Lucevis, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. Next slide, please. So this is a quick overview of the costs by in percentage. As you have seen, our costs are basically about 50% personnel, and the next largest category is professional services, where a significant part of our meetings costs appear as well, in addition to the travel and meetings costs. Admin, as I said, largely rent and telecommunication costs. Just as an information, some of you may know that our ICANN meetings costs are mainly found in the three categories of travel and meetings, professional services, where we have contractors that support the logistics of the meeting, and in admin, we also have a certain amount of costs for ICANN meetings with the translation booth, the interpretation booth, and so on, as well as telecommunication costs that appear there. Next slide, please. So this is a quick overview of the drivers of the variance of costs year on year. So we are at about 130 million at the end of FY17, or this is what we project, and we are projecting to be at 137 million of costs. This amount is the same than the 143 million that we looked at earlier, but removing the contingency, because the contingency is an amount of cost that we don't yet know what they would be constituted of. So we have seen that the impact of the growth is largely driven by personnel costs, split between the inflation cost relative to the existing staff, as well as addition of 24 headcount during FY18. And we have a smaller number of projects in capital, as we have seen with Rinalia's question, and we, including the fourth floor of our LA office, which was a project that had some spend in FY17, which of course is not repeating in FY18. Next. No, sir, can you go back for a second? So between this one and the previous one. So next slide, please. I just wanted to point out to the fact that we have here the risks and opportunities associated with this budget. This is simply to try to sense what are the type of potential expenses that would occur that we have not necessarily planned for, or that we have planned for but that could be different. We've just talked about the WS2 extension into FY18. We also have a certain number of unfunded activities that have been considered during the development of the budget that we have not necessarily included on the basis of prioritization in the FY18 budget. As a matter of information, we have provided in the draft budget, that the draft document that is under public comment, a list of those potential unfunded activities for FY18 that have not been included, though considered, so that we have a bit of transparency to the community on what those activities are, and that could be the basis for input during public comment from the community as to whether those activities should be included or not in the budget. Lucevis has a question.
Go ahead, Lucevis.
In the interest of time, just to flag two things. One, for the risks, is that the delay could increase the expenses, but there was also a mention, which was raised yesterday in the CCWG, that the diversity working group would be requesting translation. And there are two languages. They're thinking about French and Spanish, and the idea is to make sure that the work would be more accessible and we could have a more diverse working group. It would be nice if the diversity working group could be more diverse, but I could imagine others might follow. So that's just not just a delay issue. It's actually additional costs coming in. I just want to make sure we have a process for making sure that when that happens, the costs have to come from somewhere. I don't know if we could call it a risk because it's also an opportunity, but it's an important thing to flag. The second thing is, and that's not related so much to the work stream 2, but something that might come out of work stream 2, is there's a discussion about some diversity office. Now, this is very vague at the moment, and it may take years to decide whether that is the best way to increase diversity. But if something concrete like that comes out of Workstream 2, at which phase do we kind of start integrating it into a future budget and make it clear that there are budgetary implications to any kind of decision that is taken? Because from the culture I come from, you can't actually add something to the budget unless you cut it somewhere else. And I'm not sure that that's really part of the mainstream budget thinking here yet.
Joran, and just time check, we have 3 minutes left.
Okay. No, it's an excellent question. I'm looking forward for the proposals from the workstream too. And the mechanics of it, it will be, it will be ending up in the discussion in the CCWE group, and then it will be a proposal for the board for consolidation coming into the budget. And then, of course, we have to do calculations about the additional cost for adding more languages. And that is the only way we can do this, because I also think that other parts of the community has to have a reflection on, because what's going to happen is that with the balanced budget we're working under, the assumption is that if something, any good suggestion comes up, we have a prioritize that against other things. So we give the community the opportunity to say that this is now more important than that, and therefore we're going to put that into the budget and take something else away. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to answer the first question of Lucevice, we are looking into the evaluation of the costs associated with the translation, the interpretation for the diversity working group, and the decision will be made on the basis of how much cost it takes. Thank you.
Go ahead, Xavier.
Thank you. Can we go back to the previous slide? Thank you. I won't go over it, but this is a breakdown of headcount by function. So, Rinalia, for a more detailed answer to your question, in this document we have the breakdown of the headcount by function and the change between years. And you can see it's fairly distributed across various organizations. Next slide, please. Next. This is the list of unfunded activities that I mentioned earlier that have been considered but not included in the budget. I'm not intending to go over each. Of course, it's simply for you to know that this information is provided as part of the public document. Next slide, please. Just to remind you of a global overview of the new GTLD program, you have here a very high-level representation of the program over multi-year. I want to emphasize that we have, of course, in the FY18 budget, the fraction of the program that is expected to impact FY18, but I always want to give you the full view of the program because that's the only way it makes sense. We have about 22 million of costs expected for the program in during FY18, either in the form of refunds of applications that are being withdrawn or of supporting costs for the program that continues in terms of the evaluation costs. Next. Sorry, Steve has a question.
Thank you. We flip back to slide 39, the one before this. These, you say, are the unfunded potential activities, so these were formally considered and each one was not included. To what extent do we explain why they were not included? That's one thought. And the other is, I think this is an enormously powerful and helpful forthcoming exercise to say what we didn't consider. But that's my thought. I don't know whether or not that's shared by everybody else. Do we get any feedback from the community on whether or not this information is understood, is responded to, and so forth? What impact does it have?
So this is the first time that we offer that information, so we don't yet know how it will be received, but I'm hoping that it will be helpful. We will definitely discuss that in the various sessions that we have with the community during ICANN 58, because it's a little innovation, and therefore we would like to make sure that it's a useful piece of information. To your point about the justification as to why it's not been included, there's, in quotes, a story behind every one item, and there's probably more activities that have been considered at some point in the budget. But we will explain that on the basis of the questions that we get during public comment.
So I don't want to extend this, but I do want to say a very positive thing. This looks like a very helpful innovation, and it would be interesting to see how it plays out.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. This was a very good. This is something we deliberately put in so that we're all aware of what we have to leave out of the budget. We are 2 minutes over schedule. Xavier, do you have any more to add before we can wrap up?
Can we go over the next few slides very quickly, Wendy, please? Look at this next. This is simply a schedule that aggregates together the both sides of the structure that we looked at earlier, operations on one hand, new GTLD. Together, it forms the entire VICAN from a financial impact standpoint, and the numbers are here. I'm happy to talk about them offline further if need be. So $162 million of funding in total for FY18 with the new GTLD program, $153 million of expenses for an expected excess of nearly $10 million in total. Next slide. This is a cash flow statement. This is another innovation in the budget. We thought it would be useful to provide an understanding of not only funding and expenses, but also the cash impact of that funding and expenses, and a breakdown of that cash impact between the operating fund, the reserve fund, the new GTLD program, and the auction proceeds. Of course, as you can tell, we are not necessarily expecting any auction proceeds during FY18. Next. Next steps very quickly. We will have, as we said, the SONAC additional budget request is submitted for your approval early April. At the end of April is the end of the public comment period. During the month of May, we will respond to the comments with guidance and oversight of the BFC on the comments, on the quality of the responses before those responses are published. Last innovation of the budget process this year, we will publish early June the adjusted budget. If it has been adjusted, we will publish it early June in order to allow for some time of the community to be able to understand what this final budget is before it is considered for approval by the board. Common sense, before the board approves it and then we go into ICANN 59, the community has a chance to check that there's not been any significant change or that they know what the changes are that have been made to the budget, which may, of course, result from public comment. That would be the logical situation.
Okay,
on that basis, we're done.
Thank you, Xavier, and thank you, everyone, for your comments, your questions, and more importantly, your excellent suggestions. I really appreciate that we had an excellent discussion today here on the budget. Please just pay attention to this last slide on the next steps. The board will be asked to approve this budget in Johannesburg. So we will get, once we get the comments back from the community, the budget will be updated, and we will have another session with you in Johannesburg before you're asked to vote on it. Thank you. And with that, I'd like to close this session. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Asha. Thank you, everybody.